Hey everybody, it's me, Andy.
And I'm Sean.
And this is the Commander's Brew.
This week, Lazav the Multifarious.
Hey everyone, and welcome to 167 Commander's Brew episode 167. I'm Andy. Sean, how's it going?
Yeah, good.
Oh man, for some reason it feels like we haven't done this in forever. Maybe it's just because we're recording a bit later today.
Maybe, but that would only make it like 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like more of a wait than normal.
Yeah, I know. For some reason it does feel to me that we haven't done this in like 2 weeks.
It does.
Meanwhile,
that's not true.
That's not true at all. We haven't missed a week ever. That's not true. We missed 1 week, I think, in our first year. Anyways.
Discipline.
I was thinking about it. I think the last time we missed a week was either Christmas or Thanksgiving of the first year we did the show. And this weekend was Canadian Thanksgiving.
So yeah.
It's kind of like it's possible anniversary of like one of the only times we've ever not released an episode. That's pretty good.
I'll drink to that.
Mm-hmm. I'll drink a coffee in a Luke Skywalker mug. That is really weird because of the green screen. Welcome, everyone. 167 Commander's Brew. Here we are. It's been a long time. And we're here in the midst of Guilds of Ravnica. And we're doing it. We're doing it again. We're brewing with another one this week. But before we get to all that stuff.
Yeah, we got to tell you what we're all about.
We got to tell you what we're about.
We got to tell you all about all this business. We want to thank you. We don't want a whole episode to go where we don't get to thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. We want to thank our patrons, old and new, for keeping the lights on, as it were, and the cameras running. We want to thank Ultimate Guard for all these sleeves and boxes. We want to thank the fellas over at Wizards Tower, wizardtower.com. Let's hear an ad from them now.
Well, not a lot of attention going on out here on the farms of Ravnica. We're a couple of miles outside the city, and we're not all caught up in all those informants and conclaves and houses and leagues and all that. Just a simple life growing carrots and grains for everybody in Ravnica to eat. And as government subsidies to keep the food moving. Our cattle's really nice. Oh, also, did you know that our farm is called the Wizard's Tower? Wizardtower.com, and you can buy magic singles here? If you live in Earthplane in Canada, we'll ship them to you for free if you spend $15 or more on them singles. Oh, and use coupon code CityOfBrews. That's how you get an extra 5% off. And we'll give you 3% kickback on your next order that you can use on other things, other singles, or maybe some eggs. Or some carrots. You know, just please don't be surveilling around here or do some sort of spooky magic on my rabbits. Okay, have a nice day.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. This one, I don't agree with. I don't like it. It's not something I'm into.
I guess I'm just confused. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing you would just agree or disagree. I mean, everybody, this is just sort of a fundamental, you can't agree or disagree.
No, I do disagree with it. I don't think that's, I mean, everyone just accepts it for that. But I think there's a lot of different facets, a lot of ins, a lot of outs there. And I think it's not as good as everyone thinks.
I mean... But, like, if there was no farming industry, we wouldn't eat.
Yeah, but, I mean, no one says you have to farm, right? Like, you don't have to. You can just order food.
No, but, Andy, the food that you order came from a farm before that.
No. It came from the restaurant.
Yeah, but the...
So, listen, all I'm saying is that you don't have to farm. You don't have to like farming. It's not as important as maybe everyone makes it out to be.
Okay, well...
You can grow your own food.
That's farming.
No, it's
Andy.
Not. That's what farming I don't have a farm. Is. I can grow a tomato in my backyard.
I guess that's a garden, so it's technically
more of a garden.
Different.
It's more of a garden. I'm a gardener, not a farmer.
Okay, well, nonetheless, I do think that Ravnica as a city neglects the support of its farmers too often.
Well, see, that's another thing that I disagree on right there. I mean, I think they've got plenty of support for farming. You know, they got a whole guild that's basically about farming.
Is it?
Not is it. Celestia. Not is it.
Burr, burr. Do they farm or do they just have forests?
They're growing trees back there. They're farming trees.
I don't know. I guess I'm having
trouble. And I don't agree with it.
Okay. I know you're not a
I'm not a fan.
Celestia player. Yeah, okay.
I am kind of a little bit, actually.
You're all over the place on this one.
Yeah, I'm all over the place. But rest assured, I hear these ads the same as everyone else. And yes. I understand what they're about. And I definitely, my takes on these ads are legit.
Well, they are legit. They are valid and legit. Rest assured,
they are valid, yes.
Okay. Shall we? Okay, let's.
Yes.
Let's get into our discussion topic.
Yes, please. Let's.
This week we're going to talk about the life cycle of a deck. So, what it's like when you start with a deck, the kinds of things that you change as it grows up, and then the end of a deck's life and what that means and what kind of things we do to it. And we don't usually measure these things, first of all, in time. Like, you don't put a deck together and then all of a sudden, 6 months later, it's done. Yeah. I think this is a function of how many times you play it. That's how a deck ages.
Right.
So let's talk about when a deck is born, the brand new start of a deck. You're going to see some sort of cool idea, maybe a cool commander, maybe like a cool interaction that you have just discovered, or maybe it's a tribe that you feel finally has the support you've been waiting for. That's when a deck is born. That's when you... Sure. Go through your binder and pull out about 180 cards, not including lands.
Yeah.
You know, you make a rough list, but eventually you whittle that down to a 99 plus the commander, or 98 plus the two partners. And that's it. That's your brand new deck. That's your baby. It's just been born. It's learning to take its first steps.
And just like real babies, sometimes they're disappointing. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. that's not true. yeah, but after you build them, you're in that excited phase of your new deck. You want to see it, you know, you want to see it hum. You want to see it go and do its thing. You want to see, if you're like me, you want to see specific cards come out and do the things that you hope they can do.
Which is kind of like the first steps or the first words.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is, right? So, you know, just that first play isn't even enough. You got to play that probably 3, 4, 5, 6 times before you feel like, okay, I now fully understand how these cards are working. And, you know, you might even make a few changes there, right? Which I think would be the first. So after the initial brew, where do your first changes come in? For me, it's usually about 5, 6 games after. So that can be a long time.
Oh, yeah. But it could be a long time, like in time. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you meet with your group once a week, mm-hmm. maybe you don't play the deck more than once in one session. So, like, that could be like 2-3 months before it gets to the next stage. I agree with you. I feel like I 4-5 games, 5-6 games, and my first changes are going to be sort of the generals. No, I don't mean like the commander's generals. Right. I mean, like, is there enough interaction? Is there enough card draw? How do I feel about the ramp? That's kind of, I make my major changes there, right? And this is the point where I find out it's like, ooh, this interaction that I thought isn't what I thought it would be. So maybe I make a major change there. The deck can look significantly different than its first draft here.
And I think this is kind of the point of a lot of content creators' stuff. So like we do deck techs. We do these discussions about, you know, general sort of topics, things like that. Also to lots of other commander content creators. It's almost all there to like cut down on the revision part of it, right? So you want to get to the deck you want as quickly as possible, because you don't want to play a deck and then like 5 or 6 have it wait 5 or 6 times to play it a couple months down the road and be like, man, this is not doing what I wanted it to do. I'm not having fun with this. So then you make revisions, and then you got to wait another few months probably for you to be able to see those cards popping up. And even if you're like gold fishing a deck, like that's not completely accurate, right? You're missing obviously interaction from not only other players, but the decks in your meta, which is very important, I've found, which I think is a little bit farther down the road when it comes to like changes. But you definitely want to see how the deck rolls and quickly as possible get to the like close to like peak like operation, right? You want to get your mana down. You want to get your card draw down. You want to get, you know, the toolbox things it needs to do and then make the synergy right and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of that's dependent on your meta too. Like, you know, I think so, you know, just to finish that thought before we go too fast, but like, yeah, like our podcast, our deck tech episodes, we're sort of in this middle range here, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the brews we come together, we have come up with, and we're using our experience to try to put together as much of a balance as possible. But you know, very rarely do we have are we presenting decks that we have put into paper and have played with other human beings a bunch of times. That doesn't
basically
happen
too never, often. Really.
Basically, yeah. And it's usually, this is usually where, and we're going to, these are the sort of adolescent decks, right? Where they're like, yeah, they're kind of doing the thing they do, but you're just going to need to have them come into their own. Find out, do you need more Wraths? Do you need more of this, more of that? Is there like a couple of decks in your meta that need answers? Well, you're going to have to add those answers to them.
Yeah, I would even argue we're kind of even earlier on the scale. If you look at like all the creators that do this type of thing, deck techs and things like that, I think we're pretty early on the scale. We're more about the like the synergy and the ideas that come up, whereas some other people are like more developed. Like they'll tell you exact cards, and like, you know, they've almost like, it almost feels like they've done they played with it more or something. Like, because a lot of people will do like a deck that they own, whereas like we're coming up with a new one every week, so it's, you know, most of these aren't ones that we actually own or have played with very much at all. And so there's going to be, I think, a few more changes for us, but we're more focused on and excited about like the creativity and like the themes and those types of things anyway. So I think that there's, I don't know. I mean, if you're listening, you probably agree that like there's room for that. And that's where you listening to it, you're not, if you put one of these decks together from the Commander's Brew, there's a lot of room for you to add your own style to it and add changes. And I think, and we basically do that on purpose really so if you take a, you know, inspiration, so many times people have come up to us and said, oh, I built your, you know, I built this deck. Like, for example, one I remember we used to hear a lot at the beginning was with the Aloro deck, which was just a Esper Reanimator deck that Sean put together. And a lot of people really were into that deck. But, of course, they made all kinds of changes to the actual creatures and maybe things like that. But at the heart, it was that idea that Sean had put together. So so I like that. That's one of my favorite things about Commander, period, and Magic in general.
Yeah, that's also my favorite time with a deck. Yes, I love, you know, getting those reps, and I love that stuff. But eventually you get the deck to the point where you're like, you know what? Deck's good. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've taken away, down to the point where I was like, oh, I'm going with one less land, I think. Like all of those details. Yeah. But
fine,
like, you got
tunes at that point.
It's fine tuned, and now the deck's ready to go. I think now it's an adult deck. Like the deck is grown up at this point. And now you're playing it. Now you know what's in there. If you ever have a tutor, like, you already know, it's like, I know the word I'm going to go, I know the card I'm going to go for. It's easy to find. Like, I've got these three options, and that's what I need. This is when you really know the deck. And at this point, I like to think that the only really major changes that will happen are when new sets come out.
Yes.
And new cards can get it. Or maybe, like, reprints get a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, if a budget is an obstacle, which it is for, I'd say, most of us, whenever a good reprint comes out in like a master set or something like that, you might go, oh, that's it. I'm springing for the card I've always wanted, and I'm going to throw it in there.
Yeah. So that's how many decks do you say, Andy, that you have in that stage?
Yeah. So I was about to ask you this as a similar question. Okay. I was going to say, of all the decks that you have and are like, you consider currently like that are playable for you, because I'm sure we all have decks that are like kind of in a half, you know, state of repair or whatever, but all the ones that you would consider playing in on a Magic night, how many of those are in this stage? So you asked me, so I say, so the topic of discussion was sort of inspired by a listener saying, wanting to know like how many decks do we maintain? I'd say for me, it's gone from, I've gone from like having like 16 at one point. I think that was the highest I had. And it's pared down a bit now. I'd say it's around 11 right now. 11 or 12. And in this state, this kind of like adult state, I think, I want to say like most of them, because actually I haven't built a new deck in a pretty long time. I'd say in like a year. Brea Hellkite Tyrant, which is an episode we did on the show, is the last deck, last new deck I put together. So
yeah.
They're up there now. They're all pretty old. Like I got a bunch of adults sitting around in my deck boxes these days.
Yeah, and they're all talking about careers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm aching to put together something new, but I've had a lot of things where I'm like trying to change decks I have into other decks and things like that. And it's so far I'm hitting like a bit of a wall with it. Oh, actually, you know what? I guess the Atraxabowl. I have that deck. And that deck is a lot of fun. And that deck is not... That deck is very loose. That's not an adult deck yet, really, either. That's an adolescence deck, but it's an adolescence deck that's like loose on purpose, and I don't want to tune it much. So it's weird.
Yeah.
So I'd say most of mine are like that. What about yours?
I recently have butchered a lot of decks.
Oh yeah.
I've had decks on the shelf that I considered in their adulthood, but I hadn't looked at for like over a year and a half or more. So for that, I don't really consider them. Like, I was in a different deck brewing mindset at that point. So if I were to redo them, I would want to redo them. I guess I kind of, my playstyle evolved away from them. I'm not sure how to describe it, but, you know, I recently took apart a few old ones that I just wasn't playing with that I intend to upgrade later, but they're no longer even complete. Like, I've used the parts for other things. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm down to like six or seven actual playable decks that I could pick up right now and play. And I got a couple more that I could get playable fairly easily by just putting in random staples of the colors that they are.
But they're all basically in adulthood, kind of.
I don't think so. No, I think in adulthood, I think I maybe have like one or two.
Really?
Because recently, I guess... I'm just more enamored with the newer ones, I guess. I just want to put the more work into those.
It happens. It definitely happens. So, like, I know what that's like, too, because when I did that Brea Hellkite episode, I was like, this is a fun deck. It does a lot of different things, attacks on a lot of different angles. I'm into it. And then I put it together, and then it's one of the first decks I've ever made where right after the brew, it was, like, chocked full of, like, I couldn't fit anything else in.
Huh.
You need the ramp and fixing that it has. You need this amount of card draw, these cards specifically for it. And then you need these amount of cards for the synergy and everything like that. And I was just like, the new Izzet Commander deck came out, the precon, and it had a lot of the cards from that deck, and then some of the new ones, I was like, I'm going to put a couple of them in that deck. And then I'm sitting here looking at it and I'm like, I think I can only fit in two cards from here. And it's I can't remember which one specifically I put in, but I did update my deck list for it online. So, but yeah, only
did you put
two.
In the
and it was like did... taking out something that makes Thopters, like a creature that enters the battlefield makes Thopters, and like for one that makes like one more, like kind of like slightly better versions of that.
Did you put in the Genesis Wave for artifacts?
I put that into my Duretti deck.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a better spot for it.
Yeah, because it's like, because the weird thing about my Brea Hellkite Diamond deck is it's actually not that, it's a lot of artifacts, but it's mostly creatures that make artifacts. Okay. So those like artifacts matters cards aren't all that good. There was some that are really good in it, but there were some that weren't. So that one's better in the Dreddy deck. So then we were talking about, you know, what you do once you've had these decks around for a long time, you know, a number of years, you've played them all, you know what you're doing. And is this when the issue of retirement kind of creeps in?
Yeah. So, I would qualify that when you like, you go to pack your bag and you pick up the deck box and you think, and this is what I think, I'm just like, and this is part of the reason I took apart some of those other decks, because I was like, I've done everything that this deck can do. Like I've made the combos in it happen. I've had the cool, you know, all the neat moves that I like about it. I've done all the neat moves. And it's like, well, yeah, I've experienced everything that this deck has to offer. And I'm good. And I'm going to, you know, put that to bed and start a new one.
It's interesting. So you brought this up. It's in the show notes here. The idea of retiring a deck because you've like done it all.
Yeah.
And I've never done that to a deck. I've only ever retired decks or taken them apart because I wasn't happy with them or wasn't having fun with them anymore. But I've never done it to a deck that's just like, well, this deck's great. I love it. But I'm not doing anything new with it. So I think it's time to move on. I have two decks specifically that I built very early on. One is Mael. What's it called? Something of the Anima.
Sage?
I don't know. And I have a Carador, right? Classic. Mael the Anima is her name. Carador, which everyone knows. But these are two decks that I've had very early on in my Commander brewing days. And I still have them together. And they haven't changed too much, but they're very different, right? So, and I know exactly what these decks do. And, like, you know, Carador is more of a tuned, like, very difficult deck for opponents to deal with, whereas Mael is pretty fun, just big smashy creatures, and it's pretty loose, right? But Mael is the one that I make more changes to, because as new, giant, stupid creatures come out, I'm like, oh, that'd be so fun for Mael. And I'll have no problem swapping a creature out that's like, well, this was fun and I've played with it and I've seen it, so now I'll just swap this new one in, because like they're kind of interchangeable anyways. Whereas Carador, it's a little bit, it's a value based deck. It's not Staxy or anything like that. It was at one point, but I took all that stuff out because I didn't like it. But it's so, but like the value, like it's hard to improve on that a lot of the times, right? So like they're not creating very many new creatures because it's a very creature heavy deck. That are going to improve on existing things that are in that deck, right? Like, you're not going to find another Sheoldred, you know? You're not going to, like, that card is just so unique and so powerful that they don't make cards like that very often, especially now. It just seems like there's some different, philosophies with R&D, right? And so if you have a deck like that has a lot of those older cards in it, where it's like, these are, like, the cream of the crop, super powerful cards, it's going to be hard to even make any changes to them. So that's one that you might consider for retirement, more than say something like a silly one where you're swapping things in and out all the time. Although I haven't retired any of them and I probably won't.
Well, I it's interesting too to think about, like, what would it, like, obviously if you have no need for the cards, right? Like, a lot of Carador's cards, to use the example, are specific for Carador. Like, they're not a ton of those cards are just generally staple cards. So, If you have no need for the cards, there's no need to ever retire a deck, right? Like, there would be no need for that. But I suppose, you know, if you've got lots of staples in, maybe you'd want to, like, move those over. Maybe that would be a reason for it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And, I mean, it depends on, like... how frequently you're getting new cards, right? Like, if you're someone who was like, oh, I get the Commander Precons for Christmas every year or something like that, right? Where it's like, oh, yeah. That's a pretty big influx of cards that you're getting, and you're probably not relying on old decks. But some people will have, like, two or three decks, and then they like, okay, I'm done with this deck, so now I can take all the goodies from there and put them into something else and spread them around and that sort of thing, which I think is also, like, you're going to find a lot of people that do that, I think.
I also think the number of decks affects this so much.
Yeah.
Like, you'll just never get bored of a deck if you have, like, a half dozen or eight decks. You'll never... like, if I had one deck, I would have to just tune it so much and then get it to adulthood where it's like, well, I'm not making any changes to this. And after a while, I think I would find that boring. I'm not the type of person who can have one or two decks and just jam them infinitely.
Yeah, and there's some decks that I think lend themselves to be more like that too, which is like a Marquesa, the original Marquesa. She has a list of cards that like are in most Marquesa decks and work so well and create such a almost like oppressive state, and it's just so hard to remove anything once a player has those things going. Like, I have that deck, it's very fun to play, but it's not, I don't think it's as fun to play against, so I don't bring it out as much. And it's because, and it's like, well, this is a tuned deck. It's got it all. What else can I do? That's one that I am kind of like, should I retire this deck? I don't bring it out often, so maybe it's maybe I should think about something else, doing something else with it. And I'm also one of these people that's like, yeah, I might have like 12 decks, but I want to try to like diversify the colors that I have, right? So that's my Grixis deck right now. But like, what if I want to do something else Grixis? Like, to me in my mind, I'm like, well, I've already got this Grixis deck. I might as well, instead, why don't I build like, you know, I don't know, an Orzhov deck. Like, I don't have an Orzhov deck, so I might as well, like, can I do that instead? Or can I go for one of the four colors or, you know, something like that. Anyways, that's just my own personal neuroses about deck building, which I do.
Yeah.
I do have.
Yeah, I also know that like I want a different deck box for every deck. If once I've used all the colors of deck boxes, then I'm just like, what am I gonna do now?
So yeah. Anyways, I guess in conclusion, kind of, the more decks you have, obviously, the less I think you'll get tired of them. But I think the more you'll consider, you'll see yourself playing certain ones over and over, right? I find that a lot. Like, I bring out Brea a lot. It's also the newest one I have. But I still also play, you know, other certain ones more than I play others. And maybe that's when you'd consider retiring. And, you know, if you're like me and you want to, like, you want to get into a color combination that you already have, well, maybe break up the one you have and go for it, right? That might be a move. I'm actually considering that for myself now.
Yeah. I also think it's neat when the rotation happens often enough. It is neat when your meta, when an old deck that you haven't seen in a while shows up.
Yes, it is.
That's always fun. Where you're like, oh, I remember this deck.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Yeah, and when even if it's like not even yours, it's another person, right? Like, I love it when, you know, Alistair will bring his like Sea Monsters deck. I'm like, hey, I haven't seen this deck in a long time. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I like playing against those decks. So,
yeah.
So it's, I mean, I'm not, I don't think I will be retiring any of my decks really, but, I mean, maybe you foil it up and then that's how you know a deck has reached peak. Like, I can't, yes. I'm not going to tweak it very much anymore. I foiled it out. This is the deck now.
Oh, yeah. If you foiled it out, you have basically retired the jersey.
We could do like a whole episode on foiling. We don't do that, you and I. We're not foilers.
We don't foil. No.
No, we're budget players. So we want to get, like, why would I spend $8 for a card when I could spend, like, $2 or $3?
Yo, I'm happy to use the same regular basics that came in draft before.
Yeah.
I don't even care if the basics match.
I have thought about foiling a deck out. I've thought about it. And every time I think about it, I go like, I just can't justify it. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
Because also sometimes foiling makes it hard to see what the cards are and stuff like that. And if it's like alternate art, people are like, what is that? What card is that?
Yeah.
Anyways, that's not, I mean, I still like foils and stuff and alternate art. All that kind of thing, but
if I have a foil basic, I'm gonna use it.
Yeah, I'm using it.
I'm not gonna go buy them.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. Well, that's cool. So yeah, I mean, why don't you write in there in the comments and let us know like how many decks you're maintaining. You know, what if any are the like criteria for you to retire a deck? Right? How long do you figure it takes to get to that like that level where you hit like peak? You know, sort of efficiency or peak deck building.
Or like, what's your exit point? Like I don't think I get there. I think I jump out of decks before I fully tune them.
I think you do, too. Although one, you have one exception, certainly. At least one exception. You probably have more than one. But, like, your Animar deck is, that's like an old deck you have. Was that your first commander
deck? That was my first commander deck, yeah.
You still have that together, right?
I do not.
No, what?
No, I don't.
You took it apart.
I just took it apart like within the month because I was looking at it. I was like, I have not pulled this off the show. Well, I'll go into a little bit more detail. So there was one point where I think we were going to a GP at some point and I needed some staples. So I pulled them out of other decks. And in the back of my mind, that deck has always had needed upgrades. That deck has always needed upgrades in certain, really? like, well, because I just like, I cut some cards out of it, or I borrowed some cards from other decks, and that, or maybe I wanted to improve the mana base or something like that, and it never was, so I never played it. And then enough time went by, and I was like, well, I haven't played this in at least 2 years, so.
Wow. I thought you didn't play it just because it was so good. Like, it's too good. A lot of times it would come down and just, you know, really.
I mean, that is dominate. Part of it. That is part of it. Like, part of it is it is a bit on a scale that I didn't feel what the table was at always at.
Yeah, I mean that's the kind of, I mean, similar problems pop up with powerful commanders like that too, right? Like there was a time when I felt my Carador deck was like that too. It was just, it would just be arch enemy and I'd still be winning with it, which is like that feels weird. But things
have changed. Animar will be back though. Animar's not gone forever.
Okay, good, great. Good. Well, yeah, let us know what commanders you got, or if you feel like that about any of your decks and how many you have and all that stuff. It's got a good discussion. Okay, great. Let's get to this deck tech.
Okay, let's break it down. Lazav the Multifarious. First of all, I looked up Multifarious in the dictionary. It means having many varied parts or aspects.
Oh, okay, cool.
So Lazav the Multifarious, it's a Guilds of Ravnica commander. He's Dimir, so that's black blue for a legendary shapeshifter, 1/3. When Lazav the Multifarious enters the battlefield, surveil 1. So you'll get to throw something in the graveyard if you really want to. Lazav has 1 activated ability, no taps, X. Lazav the Multifarious becomes a copy of target creature card in your graveyard with converted mana cost X. Except its name is Lazav the Multifarious. It's legendary in addition to its other types, and it has this ability. So you get to fill your graveyard with a bunch of stuff, and you get to pay to make Lazav a copy of any one of them, and you can pay as much as you want, as many times as you want, to keep changing what Lazav is as long as it's in your graveyard there.
Yeah, right on. If you remember back to the set review, we weren't super hot on any of the commanders from Guilds of Ravnica. Lazav was one of the ones we thought you could at least still do some stuff with, right? Of course, the thing with Lazav is that you do have to pay, like, basically the full CMC of the creature it's becoming. So you want to keep those creatures low in cost, right? If we want to be able to, like, abuse some of their abilities and things like that.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things, like, so people caught on pretty quick to the main strategy of Lazav. That is to have Lazav copy sort of an unblockable creature, attack, and then sort of transform Lazav into some nefarious monster that will cause your opponents to lose the game on combat damage, or some brutal broken creature that normally is hard to get into play. So Phage. We didn't want to go that route. Phage is the main one, yes.
Phage.
We're not going to do that, though. No. And we think that's perfect for the Dimir Guild anyway. We want your opponents to see Lazav, to expect you to put in a bunch of little 1-1 unblockables, and they're just waiting for Phage to get into your graveyard. But that's where they're mistaken, because we're not going to do that. What are we doing? I guess we're doing zombies, right?
What?
So, for example, one of the cards we have in here is Diagraph Colossus, 2 and a black for a zombie giant. It's 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, it enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter for each zombie card in your graveyard. So it's minimum a 2/2. If Lazav becomes this, you won't get any +1/+1 counters because Lazav did not enter the battlefield. But whenever you cast a zombie spell, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped. So Lazav gets to do that for 3 mana. We get to, as we cast more zombies, we're putting more tokens onto the field. That sounds neat.
Right. Another good zombie is Plague Belcher, 2 and a black for a 5/4 with menace. When Plague Belcher enters the battlefield, put 2 -1/-1 counters on target creature you control. Obviously, if Lazav becomes this creature, we're going to skip that because there's no ETB. But also, whenever another zombie you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life.
Yeah, so you can see how this plays out. We're making a bunch of tokens. This is actually a pretty cool one for Lazav to become anyway, because it's got menace and it's 5/4. Yeah, that's not bad.
Exactly, that's not bad at all.
And then, of course, we got Diagraph Captain. 1 blue-black for a zombie soldier. It's 2/2 with death touch. Other zombie creatures get +1/+1. Whenever another zombie you control dies, target opponent loses 1 life. I mean, with Plague Belcher, this gets pretty ugly, but I think it's only appropriate that our commander can become the captain.
Yeah, being the captain is nice. Being able to pump zombies is nice. There's a couple other reasons in the deck why I want to do that.
So we're letting our opponents think we're a zombie deck, and our opponents are like, oh, it's just Lazav zombie. That's kind of neat.
Zombie tribal, big deal. I've played against that before. I know what to expect.
Until we resolve.
Patient rebuilding. 3 blue-blue for the enchantment from M19 that says at the beginning of your upkeep, target opponent puts the top 3 cards of their library into their graveyard, then you draw a card for each land card put into the graveyard this way.
Your opponents are probably going to say, wait,
you're milling me?
Oh, no, no. I just, you know, it's a good card draw engine, right? That's all it's in there for. I just want it, you know, I want to draw cards.
It is that. Okay, fair. Okay, great. Well, you probably want to, like, reanimate something from my graveyard and make it a zombie for your zombie tribal deck anyways.
Right. And then I'm going to resolve Mirko Vosk, Mind Drinker. 3 blue-black for a legendary vampire, 2/4. He's got flying. Whenever Mirko Vosk, Mind Drinker, deals combat damage to a player, that player reveals cards from the top of his or her library until he or she reveals 4 land cards, then puts those cards into his or her graveyard. So how many cards deep is 4 lands? 6? 8?
Yeah.
12?
Could be more, yeah. Colloquially? known as grinding, as opposed to, so if just putting cards on the top is milling, this is like kind of slangly called grinding after the card Mind Grind.
Yeah, yeah. So now your pawns are
that's a lot of milling, but I mean, I'm sure you probably, again, just want to reanimate some stuff. And then you go Jace's Archivist, 1 blue-blue for the Vedulkan Wizard. That's a 2/2. You can pay blue and tap it, and each player discards his or her hand, then draws cards equal to the greatest number of cards a player discarded this way. So wait a second, what's going on here? We're milling, we're wheeling, we got zombie tribal happening, like... But you're not milling yourself here. You're milling other people. So, like, Lazav cares about stuff in your graveyard. Like, what is happening?
And that's exactly what we want your opponents to think. We want your opponents not to know what angle you're coming from. Because we're coming from all the angles. That's what Demir's all about.
A lot of different angles going on.
Oh, so many angles.
And, you know, I mean, sure, the traditional, like, thoughts on... a mill deck is that you got to be all in on mill, especially in Commander. You're trying to mill three, four people out of 100 card decks, which is, you know, fairly true. But there's a lot of strong mill cards being created these days, and it leaves you a little bit of room to be able to like get a little flexible with that strategy. So
yeah,
we think though that this is the time to point out with the mill, with the zombies, a couple of neat moves.
Working on a neat move. Okay, so this first neat move that we want to talk about is more of a traditional Lazav neat move. So I want to talk about Hakon Stromgald Scourge. What Hakon am I even saying?
Stromgald Scourge.
If you're listening to this podcast or this video with the sound on and someone is listening, they're going to think I'm in trouble or something is wrong.
Hakon, Stromgald Scourge! Is he saying help?
Does this person need medical attention?
Yeah, what's going on?
So Hakon is a 1 black-black legendary zombie knight. He's 3/3. You may play Hakon Stromgald Scourge from your graveyard, but not from anywhere else. Interesting. So we have to have a way to discard them, which is what Jace's Archivist is for. If we end up surveilling it away, that's great too. But we can only play it from the graveyard. Or if it's in the graveyard, we can just have Lazav become Hakon. As long as Hakon is in play, you may play knight cards from your graveyard. When Hakon is put into a graveyard from play, you lose 2 life. Well, we don't have a lot of knight cards. You know, they actually didn't look up if we have any incidental knights. I forgot to look that up.
Well, I mean, you know what would have been good to put in, and I don't think we did, is Josu. Josu's a knight.
You know what? I thought about Josu, but the problem is, without an ETB, he's very underwhelming.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's true. Anyways, but Hakon lets us get knight cards. Well, I mean, it also lets you get cards that are considered knight cards.
Yeah.
And what do I mean by that? I mean Nameless Inversion, which is a tribal instant of a and the tribe that it is Shapeshifter, and it has Changeling as a result. So this card is every creature type, which is weird to say the least. Yeah, but it's 1 in a black for a tribal instant that is also a Changeling. And so target creature gets +3/-3 and loses all creature types until end of turn. So if you get this in your graveyard along with Hakon, and then you get Hakon out or make Lazav a copy of him, you can now pay 1 in a black to cast Nameless Inversion over and over and over again.
Because it is a knight card.
Because it is technically a knight. There, Hakon does this with some other with some other cool cards too in other color combinations. Like I think what's it called? Crib Swap is another great one. Sure. Great example that our friend Ben showed us. You know, you're constantly you're exiling cards because it's also a tribal instant. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. That's really neat. So that's cool. The first neat move.
Yeah.
The next one we have here is Disciple of Deceit. This is a really cool card from Dragon's Maze, if I'm not mistaken. No, it's not. It's not. It's from
Journey to Nyx.
Journey to Nyx, right. I can never remember that one. I remember Theros and Born of the Gods, but I never, it feels like I'd spent no time with Journey into Nyx. But it's the blue and a black creature. It's a human rogue. It's a 1/3, and it has an inspired. So whenever a Disciple of Deceit becomes untapped, you may discard a non-land card. If you do, search your library for a card with the same converted mana cost as that card, reveal it, put it in your hand, then shuffle your library. So basically, it's kind of a throwback to the old Transmute from original Ravnica. And what it does is, so yeah, you get to toss like a 3 CMC card and then look for another 3 CMC card in your deck. So it's a little bit of a tutor, although not like, you know, it's not an unconditional tutor, obviously, right? You need to have the same CMC for cards. And also discarding cards with Lazav is exactly what we want to do.
So I mean, you discard a 3 CMC, you can go throw Hack on in the graveyard.
Exactly.
Do a 2. The beauty of Disciple of Deceit is that Lazav can tap for other reasons and then become Disciple for just 2 and untap to get that trigger.
Exactly. So you might do this on someone's end step to become Disciple, untap on when your turn comes back around, and then switch them over into something else. This is a good example also of one of those cheap creature cards that you want that you can kind of flip us off back and forth. It's one thing that we didn't, realize is that ability that Lazav has to swap back and forth between cheap costed creatures is actually a pretty cool little ability that he has.
Yeah, he's like a supercharged Mirage Mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, this next one is a really big, neat move because this is kind of one of our main win conditions.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so think back to the zombie half of the deck. The deck that our opponents think we're all zombies. We mentioned a couple of zombie lords that are pumping up zombies. Lazav can become various types of zombies. Plague Belcher, Diagraph Captain. Our opponents are losing life when zombies die. So we're going to create Undead Alchemist. 3 and a blue for a zombie. It's 4/2. If a zombie you control would deal combat damage to a player, instead, that player puts that many cards from the top of his or her library into his or her graveyard. That's already both zombie and mill. So get a load of this. Whenever a creature card is put into an opponent's graveyard from their library, exile that card and put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. So you can see how this is playing out. If we hit our opponent for, let's say, about 10 zombie damage, let's say, Undead Alchemist, maybe Lazav as a menace 5/4, something like that, they're going to mill about 10 cards or however much damage you do. And for every creature that they mill, we're going to get another zombie token. So, and that, if our zombies are being pumped by +2/+2, maybe even more, we're putting dozens of power and toughness onto the battlefield after that combat step in the form of zombie tokens.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, you know, if you want to get into it, right, it's whenever a creature card is put into an opponent's graveyard from his or her library, so that's how we get those zombies.
Well, yeah, I didn't clarify.
Yeah.
It's not just combat damage.
Right. Exactly.
Like if you mill your opponents for any other reason. Sorry, Andy.
Yeah. It's funny because on the video, I keep switching to that card too. So the video people know what's coming up, but the audio people don't. Well, I'm just going to say it. Altar of Dementia. Why not do that? Right. So when you sack a creature, target player puts a number of cards equal to the sacrificed creature's power from the top of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So any way they mill, that's how we're going to get those zombies. Well, Altar of Dementia, you can sack one of those zombies. Like, you know, it's a 2/2, but like say it's getting buffed into a 3/3. They're going to mill 3 cards. If any of those is a creature, that's another zombie. And that creates, it's not an infinite combo, but it can be enough to kill someone or at least get them down quite a bit, right? And again, if there's even more buffs happening or if you have a board full of zombies, things can get pretty pretty nasty with this little combo of the Undead Alchemist and Altar of Dementia. This is actually one we featured on the show before. I think it's from, and Sean and I both like remembered doing this, but I think it's from one of our very earliest episodes. I think it's from one of our, I think it's from the Mimeoplasm episode very early.
Our best estimate is that's under 10, under the, in the first 10.
Yeah, in the first 10 episodes, I think we featured these two cards as well. But yeah, it's because it's a cool, powerful little combo.
And the cool thing about this in a Lazav deck, in my opinion, is that you can you can make Lazav a copy of Undead Alchemist, so that's happening. Mm-hmm. And if you can reanimate Undead Alchemist and have double the effect. Doing damage and milling is a replacement effect, so you don't get to double the mill on combat damage, but anytime you mill a creature, then you get two zombie creature tokens.
Exactly. Yeah, and that can just get out of control.
Yeah, yeah.
Neat move.
Very neat move. What's another neat move we got in here?
Oh, another neat move here is Tree of Perdition.
This is the neat move.
This mythic from, what is it from? Eldritch Moon. Three and a black for the 0/13 creature plant has Defender, and it says, and it taps, and it says exchange target opponent's life total with Tree of Perdition's toughness. So, already, right out of the bat, we know that Lazav can become a Tree of Perdition, and his toughness is only 3. So, right there, if we have Lazav become a Tree of... Oh, sorry. If we have Lazav become Tree of Perdition, he's a 0/13, right? But what we can do is we can put that trigger on the stack, Tree of Perditions. So, tap him. We're going to exchange life total with Lazav's toughness, which is 13, because he does become... an actual copy of this card,
but then an actual tree.
Yeah, then we can switch it into something with less toughness, like I was thinking earlier. Like I was thinking, Lazav can do it, but anyways, you switch it with like I don't know the 4/2. You switch it with Undead Alchemist, and all of a sudden, that trigger now sees Lazav's toughness as 2, so it's going to switch it with that. So you can just life total at 2. Now I'm pretty sure that. Does that, right? Like there's nothing I see that would make that not happen.
Nope. You're gonna tap Lazav as a Tree of Perdition.
Yeah.
And put you're gonna put the activated ability on the stack, and in response, you're gonna activate Lazav's ability and change him into like a 2-drop, something that has like low toughness.
Yeah.
So the first thing that resolves is Lazav will become that new thing. And the second thing that will resolve is that you're going to trade an opponent's life total with whatever toughness Lazav then has. The only thing that would stop it is if whenever things want to exchange from a rules point of view, if one of the things is not available to exchange anymore, then the whole thing's canceled.
Right. And the fact that you change this from Tree of Perdition to something else doesn't matter, right? Because... essentially, when we see a card's name and it's like an ability like this, it just means this card or whatever, right?
Right. It's still saying, I'm going to trade my toughness. They write out Tree of Perdition just...
Right.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I think it's probably easier. It's generally, I bet you it's easier. That's a pretty neat move. You can
neat move.
Put someone at 2 life or 3-4 life, whatever, right? As long as it's under 13, you're doing good work there.
Well, and let's think about this too. Like if you've got 6 or more mana available and Lazav is untapped as something else and your opponent is being like, oh, should I let this damage in? Yeah, I guess I'll take 4. You can be like, okay, before we go to damage, after you've declared no blockers, but before damage, I'm going to spend to put Lazav into a Tree of Perdition. I'm going to tap it. I'm going to now spend to put him as a 2 toughness thing. And now you die.
Yeah, that's... And yeah, I mean, you got to have Tree of Perdition in your graveyard and just anything else, I guess. So not like it's that hard. And
that's what I'm saying. Like Tree of Perdition is a 4 CMC. If you have another 4 CMC, chuck it to Disciple and then put the tree in your graveyard. Yeah. Like that Disciple is.
That's true.
Maybe it deserves a spot on the top 3. I don't know.
That's legit. So there you go. Pretty mean little combination, but Tree of Perdition gets it done.
I want to highlight another neat move that is just a neat card, really, on its own. But I think Blackblade Reforged is so strong in this deck. It's a 2-mana legendary equipment from Dominaria. And you can equip it to a legendary for 3 or equip it to a non-legendary for 7. An equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each land you control. That's a lot of... That's going to be big, right? You know, very often as we get to, like, the end games of Commander, you know, the players have, like, 8, 9, maybe 10 mana on the battlefield. Equipping Lazav, who will always be legendary... with this Blackblade is amazing, and we can, if we're getting in with Menace, if we're doing zombie damage or whatever, this is going to do a ton of damage and could make Lazav into the Voltron commander that we were trying to avoid.
We're kind of trying to not do, but yeah, he just kind of lends himself to it sometimes, and especially if there's any cards, I think we have some in here, I don't know, maybe we didn't even include them, but there's some, like, whenever something hits, maybe they mill or things like that, right? That's gonna play into Blackblade Reforged being even better than it looks. And
like a Mirko Vosk wearing this?
Yeah, although that won't change what Mirko Vosk does. Like, if you put this on Zadek.
Oh, yeah.
Like Lazav as Zadek or something like that, yeah.
Right.
Cool. Okay, well, yeah, there you go. A couple of nice, neat moves.
Very neat moves.
This is an interesting deck because, you know, we've seen zombie decks before. We've even seen mill decks before. But this mix of them, while not exactly like, it's not foreign to Dimir to have these two things meet up. I mean, there are cards that just do it. I mean, look at Undead Alchemist. But having them kind of split time and fuel each other in a different way than you would expect. Did you find anything that, like, any weird cards, like surprise or discoveries? Did we find anything that sort of we've never known about? I know we found some things.
Yeah, so the first surprise and discovery I want to talk about is not necessarily perfect for this deck specifically, but I just think it's worth mentioning in general. Where did it come from? It came from Darksteel. It's called Synod Artificer. 2 and a blue for a Vedalken Artificer. It's 1/2, and it has 2 abilities. X, tap, tap X, target non-creature artifacts, or X, tap, untap X target non-creature artifacts. So if you have a lot of mana rocks that are generating more than one mana, you can spend, you know, you got 3 rocks, spend 3 mana, untap them. You're going to profit mana that way. And in an emergency, if you really needed to, you could, in other players' upkeeps, like a one specific player, just tap all of their mana rocks so that they have less to do if you're about to make your endgame play next turn or something.
Yeah, this card is, like, essentially, we all know, like, the Candelabra,
Thanos. Right.
Candelabra. Crazy, like, old card and everything worth all this money.
About $100,000.
Yeah, there's the Magus of the Candelabra, which is worth considerably less money, and it does this to lands. And it's kind of hard to get lands that tap for more than one, so it's kind of, like, unless you're very dedicated around that, that can be tough to actually utilize properly. Whereas a lot of mana rocks do create more than one mana, right? Like most of the good ones do. So Synod Artificer in the right deck, like you said, like it's not exactly tuned for this deck. Like we've got those mana rocks in here, but we're not, this card can be fine, but it can also do not that much if you don't have those artifacts, obviously. But in the right deck, this card can be massive and just create so much mana for you. That I think this is like a really, this can be a really powerful card. This is yeah. And it's like a gumball. It is actually between 18 and 35 cents, which is pretty cool. Especially now, if you can like untap it and do it again, like this things just get nutty with this guy.
I like to look at this kind of effect as just like, you know, if you've got 2 mana rocks out, this thing says tap, add 3 or 4 mana to your mana pool.
Yeah,
and exactly. With a few more artifacts, like I would love a creature that says tap, add 8 mana to my mana pool. It's like, yes, please.
Yeah, no problem. Exactly. Yeah, you don't need a lot for this to happen. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay, and there's another one, wanted to mention. This one specifically goes really well in decks where you're milling yourself. Or where people are milling you, I suppose. It's called Pedantic Learning. It's 2 blue for an enchantment. And it says, whenever a land card is put into your graveyard from your library, you may pay 1, and if you do, draw a card. So a lot of times if you get something, Dreamborn Muse is a great card to sort of pair up with this, right? So anytime that happens, you just pay 1. And it's per like mil, basically, right? So like if something says like mil U3, I think it's like, is it just one? Like I'm not sure.
I think you get credit for each land.
Is it? Okay. I thought that, but then I played it in Forge and it didn't seem to do that. But maybe I just wasn't paying attention and it didn't mill more than one land, maybe. Anyways, so something like Dreamborn Muse mills everyone on their upkeep for as many cards as they have in their hand. So this is going to hit you for like, you know, three, four cards, whatever. And then, yeah, the number of lands, you can pay an additional one and draw even more cards. It's awesome with stuff like that. It's great.
So, yeah, even Lazav's little Surveil 1 trigger is just like, pop a land, absolutely. Grab a card.
You'll oftentimes find yourself popping that land right in the graveyard or right into the graveyard and then drawing a card off of it. And then, oh, it's a land anyway, so whatever, you know. And that's like the worst case scenario. So this card could be really good. If you're ever milling yourself, if that's ever part of the strategy, I'd say you got to throw a Pedantic Learning in your deck. It kind of becomes like a Rhystic Study almost.
Yeah, I feel like any old Sidisi decks would want these. Like every time you attack, you're flipping three over to your graveyard, like chance to draw a bunch there.
And you always
want to hit cool find.
And you always want to hit creatures with those things, right? Because they care about creatures going to the graveyard. And you're always like, oh man, I milled like two lands. It's like, well, now you're happy to mill lands. It's great.
Yeah.
And I just said Rhystic Study, and I meant Mind's Eye, because Mind's Eye is the one where you pay.
Oh, okay.
But that's also a very good card. Anyways, yeah.
Pedantic also very learning. Good, yeah.
Cool.
Hmm. I looked up what Multifarious earlier did. What does pedantic mean? Pedantic is an adjective that means of or like a pendant. That doesn't sound right.
That's I'm sure that's also true. But it's like a...
Oh, okay. Like, so they used it in a sentence, and it said, many of these essays are long, dense, and too pedantic to hold great appeal.
I was thinking they waver in their like...
Yeah.
What they're doing, right?
Yeah, they're not clear. They're back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, pendant. I guess it's kind of like a pendant, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Perfect.
Well, okay. Great. I mean, it seems like they used the definition in the word of the definition, which is a no-no, but okay.
What site are you using? okay, well, that being said, let's take a look at the old budget report here. Oh man, something's wrong with the budget report machine.
Oh, let's smack it a couple times. This is where we take all of the cards and we think we know what they're charging, but the numbers in the corner of the bills are secretly other numbers.
What? Oh man, I'm in this foreign country and I don't know what numbers are. That's where that would happen, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Like, what?
That looks like a five.
A blue one? Does this cost a blue one?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. That means 12 here. Oh, weird. Okay.
Which one's bigger? So we are still a budget podcast, but we're not under a strict budget restrictions, but we're still going to keep it low. But I would say this is on the higher side of what we've been doing lately.
Did you even put this in with the cuts that we made?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it still is that much. Okay.
Yeah. So this came out to about $120.
Oh, I have 110 here.
110. Okay. So 110, 120. Yeah. Between those two. And half of the value of the deck, that is to say about 50, 60 bucks, lies within 10 cards. 50 bucks for 10 cards, that's a lot. These are some expensive cards. So, and I think it has to do with like some of these mill cards, some of these mill decks, black blue, even some of the zombie cards we use too, those decks are becoming solved. Like a dedicated black blue mill deck is becoming solved, where people are like, these are the best cards that you are to use, period.
Yeah.
So those cards just keep creeping up. For example, Geth, Lord of the Vault, most expensive card in the deck. This is about $11 or $12. Four black for a legendary zombie. It has intimidate. And it has an activated ability, X black. Put target artifact or creature card with converted mana cost X from an opponent's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control tapped. Then that player puts the top X cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So basically, you get to pay black plus the CMC of any creature or artifact. You get it, and they mill that much in addition. It's also a zombie. It reanimates. It kind of does everything, so it's no wonder the price has gotten that high.
And it's a 5/5, so it's like a decent sized body for the price you're paying on top of everything, which is great.
Yeah, it's got intimidate, so it's hard to block.
Yeah, like he does it all. It's like the setup cost here is that like maybe is like you kind of either had to kill something that they owned already or you milled them once already. So it's pretty low, and that makes them pretty good.
Yeah.
You're paying for it, but it's a nice ability considering that you'll then it just kind of he kind of fuels himself. Yeah, Geth is great, but he's about $10. So if you wanted to save some money, there's no shortage of reanimate effects available in these colors, and some obviously are not like as good as this, but this it's a way to save some dough for sure.
Yeah.
The second most expensive card is Relentless Dead. Coming in at what? About 750-ish, something like that. It's 2 black for a 2/2. It's a zombie, has menace. And it says when Relentless Dead dies, you may pay black if you do return it to its owner's hand. And it also says when Relentless Dead dies, you may pay X. And if you do return another target zombie creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield. So the main reason this is in this deck is because we want this guy in our graveyard because whenever he sort of performs like a protective shield kind of around Lazav, right? So what you can do is turn, you know, if you leave 3 mana up, 3 black mana specifically, or no, actually, I guess it just one of them has to be black. You can turn Lazav into Relentless Dead if he's going to die, and then that death trigger will happen, and then you can pay the black and return it back to your hand so you're not having to let it go to the command zone and have it cost a bunch every time.
Yeah, it's a nice way to save Lazav. If you have even more mana open, you can also pay X and return another zombie from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, with it, right?
Yeah, so like this card does a lot of things. Again, it's highly utility. It's a cheap card. It's efficient. So it's, you know, that's why it's pretty expensive. This is one I would vote to keep. If you had to make a cut so far, maybe cut Geth, find another card to do it. But Relentless Dead, I think, should stay.
I admit, I'm a little surprised this card is still this much money. I mean, it is a mythic rare, but I remember when this came out, people were really stoked about it. There was like a mono black zombies deck for a little bit. This spiked really high. I had one. I sold it. And sold for like $20-something.
Ooh, good for you.
I was happy with that. And I was like, well, this card's going to be a couple bucks, maybe. But it's still around $7. So
you would have made 14.
Yeah, it's so like that. Made some decent scratch there. What's the third one?
Third most expensive card is Phoenix, God of Deception. 3 blue-black, legendary creature enchantment, god, indestructible, 4/7. Phoenix is the mill commander, traditionally, one of the top mill commanders. As long as your devotion to blue and black is less than 7, Phoenix isn't a creature. Phoenix would probably be a creature in most board states that we have going, I suspect. But either way, we can just make Lazav become Phoenix from the graveyard. Also a nice thing to have in your graveyard to save Lazav from destruction, from mass destruction.
Yes, definitely.
Lazav gets indestructible.
And even when it becomes, it's funny, when he becomes Phoenix, if you don't have the devotion, he's no longer a creature, right?
But he still has the ability.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's actually good on a couple angles.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
So Phoenix, so creatures you control have tap. Target player puts the top X cards of his or of their library into their graveyard, where X is this creature's toughness. So Phoenix or Lazav themselves can make a person mill 7. If you've got our Undead Alchemist and our Altar of Dementia combo going, you can tap one of them. Oh, I guess they'd have to have haste to be able to do that. So
yeah, that's true, because of the way that Phoenix gives them the gives them the ability, they do need haste. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, the Phoenix is a $7 card, $8, something like that. That's how decks get expensive. Like every card is like this one's 5, this one's 8, this one's 10. It doesn't take much for a deck to be like $200.
Yeah, exactly. And we're still thinking of budget here. You know, we don't stick to the strict $50 budget anymore, but we are still thinking of budget and not just jamming in $10-$20 cards everywhere, right? Like it just, you know, we will run the odd $8 to $10 card at this point if we feel like it's really good. So, and we get to talk about stuff like Geth and Phoenix now.
Yeah,
which is cool.
So what are the 3 stars?
That, yeah, the 3 stars. So the best cards, the ones that really work with this strategy, this kind of weird mix, this Dimir hybrid kind of sneaky mix of strategies. Number 3 is Geth, Lord of the Vault. Like we said, this guy's really good. 6 mana for the 5/5 with Intimidate. he's milling, he's getting something back, he's reanimating. Like, he does it all. He does everything you want to do here. It's only opponent's graveyard, so he can't mill you yourself. But this is still really good. We want to mill. Like, I kind of feel like the way this deck works is like you mill one person out, and then that enables the rest of your strategy, and hopefully you can get a board of zombies to either then get your Undead Alchemist or just strictly overwhelm someone else with zombies. So hopefully you can take care of one or two people while holding off that third person.
Yeah, it's neat. Yeah. It's neat to, like, so you're attacking the table on different levels. I think that's cool.
It is cool, and yeah, it's neat. So yeah, Geth, great card, number 3 star.
Number 2 star, Psychic Corrosion, 2 and a blue for an enchantment. This is brand new from M19. Whenever you draw a card, each opponent puts the top 2 cards of their library into their graveyard. That's a pretty slick effect. You're going to be drawing a lot of cards. We have other ways to draw more cards. Pedantic Learning, just to name one. There's a card we didn't talk about, but there's two modes. I think it's called Fascination. One mode, it's all blue X. One mode is everyone at the table draws that many cards, or everyone at the table mills that many cards. So if you have Psychic Corrosion and you pick draw, then everyone draws 10 cards, and then everyone else mills 20 cards.
In addition to them. It's almost like, I mean, really, that's a bit of a neat move right there with those two cards. But yeah, Psychic Corrosion does that with a lot of cards in here. And obviously you get your blue deck is jam-packed with card draw, so it's going to be great.
Doesn't the Psychic Corrosion guy look a little bit like Harrison Ford?
Ooh, wow.
Like, obviously the top of his head is getting messed up, but just look at the mouth area, like the bottom of it. That could be like old Harrison Ford.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Anyways, the number 1 star of the deck is no stranger to these strategies. It's Consuming Aberration. 3 blue, black for the creature horror that has a power and toughness equal to the number of cards in your opponent's graveyards. This guy gets real big real quick. And whenever you cast a spell, each opponent reveals cards from the top of his or her library until he or she reveals a land card and then puts those cards into his or her graveyard. So honestly, these two abilities obviously support each other, but this is probably more beneficial for the mill side of him that he does, right? And then he just happens to get to be this massively huge monster. So Consuming Aberration's great. I mean, Lazav can become a copy of him for 5. Like this, like,
that if Lazav is able to transform into a Consuming Aberration after not being blocked, your opponent will surely take 21 commander damage.
Yes, easily, exactly. So this guy's great on all angles. He's amazing in your graveyard, out of your graveyard. You know, he does it all. So Consuming Aberration, fantastic. The only thing that could have made him better is if he was a zombie.
Ooh, yeah, so close.
But instead, he's just a horror.
Just a horror.
And a very good one at that.
Well, great. Oh, wow. That's the deck. What'd you think, Andy? So we weren't too keen on this commander going in. We thought that the strategy was a bit too straightforward, that there wasn't a lot of outside of your typical sort of Necrotic Ooze type of combos, just put a bunch of tappers and untappers and win kind of thing.
Yeah.
Outside of that, but I think we came up with something pretty fun here.
We did come up with something pretty fun. I'm very interested to see how effective this would be. I know we tested a tiny bit with this deck, and I saw some of the synergies come into play, and then I saw some of the synergies kind of like fizzle kind of without the other supporting cards we needed. So it's just interesting as to like should we maybe toss an extra tutor or two in here just to make sure you get, you know, some key pieces when you need them. And the one good thing I like about it is that no one piece is more key than another, really. Like Undead Alchemist is nice to have because it does kind of everything, but if you have, say, Pedantic Learning out, then you'd go get like a Dreamborn Muse, right? Like that would be the thing you would tutor for. Or if you had, you know, any other piece, you'd go get the other piece that works the best with it. So actually I like that flexibility. And in that land, like in that world, the tutor I think is less of a like answer and more of like a, it creates the questions that your opponents then have to answer, which I think is cool.
Yeah. Well, and you know, now that you got me thinking about tutors, so there's that new one that has Undergrowth on it that but it can only find black cards.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So not all the cards we want are black cards. We want some blue ones. But then I'm also, since we're doing a lot of self-milling, I'm reminded of that one that it has spell mastery. If it costs 5,
yeah,
but you get 3 back if you have spell mastery. So it is effectively a 2-mana tutor at the end of the day, as long as you're spending that mana this turn, which we probably will because we went to go get something.
Yeah, that I always, always, always forget the name of Dark Petition, which is the card. But I always forget the name of that card. I just looked it up. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I was some thing where I was like, I always forget it, but here's the name. No, I immediately had to look it up because I always forget the name. Dark Petition. Great, great tutor. Love this card.
This is what really do you think of this one? Wait, didn't one come out just in M19 where you get to what you tutor for one card to your hand and one to your graveyard? That would be perfect in this deck.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah, yes, it did. It's one that I always just never, I never take that card in draft, so I don't remember. Because
it costs like 5. It's too expensive. But like for this deck, maybe that's exactly what we want. We want one in our hand, one in the graveyard, and let's go to Shenanigans Town.
Yeah, what is that card?
I don't know. Okay. I don't even know if it's from, is it from M19?
It must be. I also fully don't know what it is. Is it an instant or a sorcery?
I think it's got to be a sorcery. All these tutors are always sorceries, right?
I think. Anyways, I don't know. Yeah, I have no clue. But anyways, yeah, that would be a really good card for this one. I was thinking it's kind of, it basically does what Jared's, the one green black tutor that Golgari has, but it's not just creatures, it's any card. Anyways, cool. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a deck. I think I'd like to play with it a bit and see like what angle it needs to sort of embrace a bit more, whether it's like including more zombies or it's including more of the like mill thing. I think it might need a little bit more of the self mill, because I think there's some cards in here that will really benefit from that. And we want to mill. I think like milling everyone is kind of what this deck wants to do a bit. And interestingly enough, we did find this just as we close out here and end the show. There are no cards that for when I'm like, for me as a player, if I mill myself, that everyone else has to mill also.
Yeah.
That's not like, I thought that would be amazing. I was like, oh, there must be a card that does that. And I couldn't
sort of enchantment
find it. So like maybe I just didn't use the right wording. I looked and I checked some other cards. I tried to find cards like the wording that I think they would use. I didn't find anything. So if anyone does know of a card like that, let us know in the comments or message us over on Twitter at Commander's Brew. Let us know if there's a card that does that. But we were speculating that maybe the reason there isn't a card that does that is because it would be too easy to, maybe it'd be like way too easy to mill yourself and mill everyone out, and then you wouldn't lose because it's, you know, then it goes to everyone else's turn first.
Yeah.
So maybe that would be too easy. Interesting.
I don't know.
Anyways, let us know if there's a card that does that, because we'd like to use it. And maybe it's just not in these colors, although I find that would be really strange. How would it not be in blue-black? Okay. Well, yeah. Neat, cool deck. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Big thanks to all our patrons who make these episodes possible.
Yeah, and if you want to check out more comedy videos, check out our Brews News playlist.
Make sure you follow us on Twitch TV to see when we play live.
If you want to chat with us, head over to Twitter. We're at Commander's Brew.
And please hit subscribe to Ding the Bell and find out when we got new stuff coming out.
See you next time.
Bye.